there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind. We're bringing you the second in what may be a series on competition. The whole idea of competition and where competition comes from and how competition is the basis of our biological, social, psychological selves. So I'm looking at this, and I've gotten quite a few questions about sibling rivalry. Sibling rivalry, that's the rivalry between children. Do you ever look at your kids, you know, and you look at your children and you wonder, you know, why is he beating her up? Why is he giving her such a hard time? Why is she goading him? These are all questions that parents get lost in. Sibling rivalry is one of humanity's oldest problems. One of the first stories in the Bible, which is the oldest book in Western civilization, and the story of the ancient Jewish culture as well, deals with the rivalry between two brothers, Cain and Abel. The older brother, Cain, was irritated at constantly having to help take care of his younger brother, Abel, and kept asking his parents, "Am I my brother's keeper?" That's where that expression comes from. The story of these two brothers has a tragic ending. Cain becomes so angry that he kills Abel. And this, according to the Bible, was the first murder in history. The fact that this is one of the first stories shows the great importance given to this problem in almost all of the cultures. Judeo-Christian cultures, I'm sure. But nowadays, I've noticed, as a therapist and a family counselor, most parents don't seem very concerned with the sibling rivalry of their children in their own families. Now, this may be due to the prevalence of the idea of there's supposed to be a brotherly love, that there's supposed to be so much love between children, so parents may tend to overlook the absence of love and the presence of hatred. Sibling rivalry can easily grow into hatred. Every one of you that comes from a family where there were more than one child had to deal with sibling rivalry in one form or another. Your parents may not have been the kind of person who made you handle it badly, but maybe just the way it was without the education led to some considerable problems that you still have nowadays, like jealousy, like unable to compete or competing too much. These are all symptoms of sibling rivalry gone bad. If you're supposed to love your brother and sister, and you're told this over and over again, the repeated admonition may kind of create an illusion that there is this love in the family. By sibling rivalry, we mean the antagonism or hostility between brothers and or sisters, which manifests itself in circumstances such as a common children's family fights, which would begin with, you know, pulling the sibling's hair, or with the unwillingness to share a prized toy, or which try the patience of parents all over the world, to much more serious cases where there is deliberate abuse. What does this abuse mean? What does it mean when an older child tortures a younger child? What does that mean? What does it mean when the second child tortures the third, or when the first and second collaborate? And what happens to children? This is such an interesting story, my friends. You're going to be surprised. It's almost like you're going to wind up saying to yourself, this existed in my own home? Well, listen in. It's not difficult to find the root causes of sibling rivalry. Nature offers us many examples. The problem is basically one of competition for limited or scarce resources. In nature, the competition is usually for food. whenever there are two individuals or species that consume the same type of food in the same area, they'll fight with each other until one of them manages to kill or drive off the other. This is in all of nature. If there's scarce resources, then you got to kill the other person who's trying to get it, and this is natural. There's some extreme cases. Sharks, for example, a very interesting thing about sharks. Baby sharks develop within the mother's womb. The biggest baby shark devours all of his brothers and sisters, so that only one shark is born at a time, and each shark that was born has eaten his brothers and sisters, right? And becomes a lawyer. No, okay. Ensuring for himself all the best resources. Eagles. Another example is eagles up in the treetops. You know, we admire eagles and we love eagles, and eagles are beautiful and they're gorgeous. Well, if you're the biggest eagle of five eaglets, I think they're called, when mom's not looking, you pick up the baby eagles and you throw them out of the nest. You know, you throw them over the cliff. So mom will go away. You know, I'm going out shopping or I have to go to work, whatever mom says. And when she comes back, there's only one eaglet left. And that's because the older eaglet did the dumping. A similar competition exists between siblings and human families. The scarce resources. What are the scarce resources in a family? Time with your parent, attention, love, and approval. Those are the four things. The four things a kid wants. Looking at this situation in very simple terms, if the parents have a certain limited amount of time to give all their children, then it's easy to see if there's only one child in the family, he gets all the available time. If there are two children, he gets half the time. If he gets three children, he gets a third of the time. Of course, it's never that evenly divided. But what happens? What happens at the beginning? To examine this situation a little more closely, friends, and just if you just tuned in, it's Armand DeMille talking about competition in one of its biggest forms, which is sibling rivalry. We want to talk to you about your family, too, a little later in the program. But let's put ourselves in the place of each child in the family as it is born. Now you're a new kid. Brand new, the only one in the family. You're the only child. You get all of your parents' time, all of your parents' attention, all that's available for you. And life is pretty good. Well, I mean, it's pretty good if you got fairly sane parents. You feel special. Your parents make you feel special. Usually gets to spend at least, you get this time to spend with your parents at least a year when you're the only and older child. But this limited, even this 1 year of getting undivided attention seems to correlate with what we know about success, that the firstborn children in business tend to be the most successful. And I believe it may be because they did get this one, at least beginning, year of undivided time. It helped build your personality. But then what happens? A second child is born. Now you're a year old, which means you're pre-verbal, and you can't really express yourself, but you have a lot of emotions. Can't express yourself well. And suddenly the exclusive time you had is immediately reduced to at least half, if not more, because you're the older kid and the new kid needs a lot of attention. The true situation is even worse. A new baby requires enormous amounts of time, effort, and attention. What the firstborn feels, what do you feel? You're firstborn. What did you feel? Imagine, or even if you're the secondborn, imagine yourself as a firstborn. What do you feel towards this new baby? You feel like an eagle. You know, you feel like, I wish I could dump it out of the nest, you know, so I can get that thing for myself. I want to get that attention and love for myself. Now, this is normal. in nature. Hatred of your new peer is normal in nature. I know this sounds crazy, but it's true. You dislike it. You have an intense dislike for this new kid. And if your parents haven't kind of done something to interfere with it, which we'll talk about later what they could do, the new situation goes on and on. The firstborn's not happy with it. It may have been like 1 year, but he had 1 year to himself, and then this new kid comes along, and unconsciously the old child begins to look for ways to get the parents to stop loving the younger one. See, here's the idea. How am I going to get them? I mean, the desire is I want them to love me. And what you're seeing is they're loving this other kid, the new one, the baby. How am I going to get them to stop loving the younger one? Well, one way is to throw the kid out the window. Right? And little kids, I'm talking about older children, have amazing fantasies about how to get that child to stop being loved. So they might begin to directly irritate and bother the young child. So when the parents the parents may not even be aware of it. So what you do is you as the older child will do little torturous things, like if the baby's sleeping, you go over and you tweak its body or pinch its body while it's asleep. And then it wakes up crying and you run out of the room. And so you don't know why the child is crying, but the crying irritates the parents, and you get out of the way. And children, young children, I know you're not going to believe that this takes place, but they love to torture their younger kid, their younger siblings. They just love to do it. And then all of a sudden your child is crying and you don't know why. And so you go upstairs and you awaken in the middle of the night and some part of you doesn't like it. Now, what happens when you catch the older child torturing the younger child? Well, then it gets worse. You punish the older sibling. You punish them, and you tell them how they should behave and what they should feel, and you make them even worse. See, and so what happens is an older child who gets punished for cruelly dealing with a younger child has to become more creative in how he tortures the other kid. And they do creative things, like they'll take the other child's clothing and misplace them. See? They'll put them from one part of a room to another part of a room. They'll do things to their toys. They'll make it seem as if the child, the newborn, you know, as they get older, like 1 year old and you're 2 years old, you make it seem like the newborn is the one who is can't keep things together. So the parents come and they chastise the younger kid. And you're in charge. You're the older one. Now, keep what happens. If this gets serious, you later develop a part of your life that spends your entire adulthood torturing younger siblings. You become an in-charge person who likes to make other people feel uncomfortable. If sibling rivalry were handled properly, we would not have war. This is a world where people are taught to not recognize this problem and to let the problem manifest and fester. And when it festers, you have a world of kids getting even. Little kids getting even with big kids getting even with little kids. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. And we're not talking about crazy world. I know you may have come from a peaceful, wonderful family. You know? But it's not always so peaceful and wonderful. Meanwhile, how does the younger sibling see all this? Remember, when you first arrive, when you're first born, you go into a world where you got these wonderful parents who are taking care of you, and then you have this irritant. You have this other kid, this other little being who's around, who's always hurting you and making you feel bad. But you can't do anything about it because you can't communicate it. You can't communicate it to your parents because you're being tortured, but you're pre-verbal. So what do? You get older, and then eventually you start telling your mom, you know, Mom, he hit me. He took my toy. Although this is a thing that you imagine is going to work, because now you're telling tales on your older parent, your older sibling. The parents eventually get sick of hearing you complain. And they start holding both of you responsible. And this is the way the game works. As they grow older, younger brothers or sisters begin to develop all kinds of tactics to block the older sibling's attacks. They even get even. This is one of the reasons why, to attract the parents' attention and approval, the younger child will tend to develop abilities that are different than the ones developed by the older child. You see, you as a younger child, you'll develop these abilities that the older child can't deal with. Like you'll create new ways to be to get even with them. Like if your older child, if your older brother is a baseball player, you're not going to try to compete with him as a baseball player because he's bigger. So maybe you'll learn to play chess to outdo him. You try to get even, but you try to do it differently. How was it for you when you were a kid? How was your family around this issue of sibling rivalry? How did you handle it as an adult? I mean, keep in mind, nobody's wrong here. Parents aren't wrong. Older kid isn't wrong. Younger kid isn't wrong. But if you're still doing it to this day, if you're still torturing each other, you're kind of caught in an old drama. So I'd like to hear from you. I've got a lot more to talk to you about sibling rivalry, but first I'd like to hear from you about this. The telephone number here is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. I want to take your calls. I want to talk about you as a child, as you remember your siblings, and the torture exchange. You know? Now, what some parents do is they prepare an older child. Especially, you know, if the child is like 3 years old. Because if they're 1 year old, you can't prepare them very much. They'll prepare the older child by telling the older child about the coming of the new child. And they'll try to make the older child feel somewhat as if this is theirs, you know. That this younger child is part of their thing, not just their family's exclusive of them. There are other factors that affect it. For example, if the second child's sex is different from that of the first, it'll tend to lessen the development of the rivalry. So, for example, if the second child is a girl and the first child is a boy, it's not as bad as if they're both boys or both girls. And the difference in ages, as I've said, can show a great deal. So I've seen quite a bit on this, and I don't see many people who can handle it properly. 212-209-2900. I'd like to take one of your calls just to say hello to you, and then we'll continue with this exploration on sibling rivalry. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I'm the oldest.
Uh-huh.
And I had a sister who followed along 4 years later.
4 years later. Well, that's quite a bit later. Good. Tell me what it was like.
Well, I felt like I was always getting in trouble for being the oldest, and yet I'm kind of quiet and shy, but she's like hell on wheels, and I felt like she was always like trying to get in my spot, and then that's how it went, and then I would like ignore her all the more. So consequently, like, I don't know if it's so, but I hate, like, competitive games. Like, I can't play sports because I can't stand to win and I can't stand to lose.
No, say it again. You mean you had a child, you had a daughter.
No.
You had a sister. I'm sorry. You had a little sister. How did your family feel about your little sister?
I think everybody kind of rolled their eyes because she's one of those people who kind of sucks all the oxygen out of the room, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, she wants, she needs, she's active, she talks, you know, it's like, she's on fire, she's not quiet, she's not content, she's on the move, you know.
So she was automatically, but were you punished?
Yeah, I felt like my parents felt like, well, you should be able to deal with her now, and you should just ignore her. That's how I felt.
See, so there's a kind of a difficult thing. you're born, here you are, life is pretty good for the first 3 years. Then comes along this younger kid, and now you're being told that you've got to be kind of like a semi-adult, and she's a hell on wheels.
Yeah.
Right? And so she's out there all over the place, and it's not her fault. I mean, how is she going to get it? Now, do you remember ever torturing her?
I think I turned my back on her, and that was my form of torture.
That was your form of torture. She didn't exist.
Right.
But you didn't do anything actively that you could remember.
No, I think I just ignored her, but that was a cruel punishment, too, you know. No, because I couldn't get away with, like, smacking her. I remember, actually, it's funny, I remember once as a high schooler, she did something to me. She pulled my hair or something, and I turned around, and there she was. We were eye to eye. She was as big as me. And I smacked her real hard. Because I thought, no more. She's not so small anymore.
So now, because she's adult, you can smack her. So let me ask you something. This whole idea of competition in your life nowadays, how do you feel about competition?
I can't stand it. It makes me freeze. I don't know what to do.
And what about social competition?
Now, I hate that too.
Okay, now we have two kinds of competition we were talking about. There's a sexual competition, which has to do with romance and love.
Yeah.
How about competing for love?
Oh, I feel real competitive about that.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's one place where you feel really competitive. Mm-hmm. And give me an example of that kind of competition.
Well, I think I'm insecure, and I always think some woman's going to steal my man away.
Right. So you're keeping an eye out at all time.
Right.
You have this kind of sensitivity. Let's just say you have a sensitivity to somebody taking away the attention of your man.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that happened to you once before, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you were a kid, you had a man. I mean, your dad was your man.
Yes. Actually, I'm real close to him even to this day.
Well, how about when you were little? Were you really close to him?
Yes.
And did your sister get his attention?
I'm sure she did. You know, I'm sure at that point, you know, they're nice people. I'm sure at that point they had to divvy
pay
it up.
Attention to her, especially since she was so distraught.
Yes,
so
active.
Part of the theory here is that that kind of lingers with you. And now you're still fighting the battle of your sister stealing your parents' attention. And it doesn't have to do with sexual sense of insecurity necessarily, but just a sensitivity to having your dad taken away.
I always thought it was because she was a girl, too, because I feel like with men, I don't feel competitive with men, but I feel problems with women.
All women.
I used to. I'm getting better, but I used to just, like, I didn't trust them. I wasn't comfortable in the company of a bunch of women.
It's very common for a woman who feels close to her father to feel that she is disliked and almost hated by other women. It's so common, it's amazing. Because in effect, you know, sometimes a woman who's close to her father feels like mommy even hates you for being that close, you know?
I felt like that. Yeah, I did.
What did you feel?
I felt like, I think my mom's also quiet and kind of insecure. And I feel like for her as a person, it must have been a great leap to have children and share all of that, I think.
So she had to share her man.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, she's kind of a gentle, sensitive person. I'm sure it took all sorts of toll on her, too.
And in some way,
become a mom.
But you just wanted your daddy, you know. You really weren't fighting with her about it. You just wanted to have dad for yourself. And it was a harder struggle when your sister came along. So here you are, a person who's kind of punchy about other women resenting you. Both your sister and your mother probably resented your closeness with your father.
That's how I felt. That's very astute of you.
Because it carries you today. You see, it's hard for you to get close to women.
Yeah, really. I'm trying to improve. As I grow, I improve, but
there is one wonderful And I don't say small. I say wonderful solution that I know of. And it has to do with women's groups. Now, sometimes I think there are things that are good, but things that are great, among the great things, is groups where there are women who are kind of working together. And I'm talking about psychological groups where you get a chance to really explore, undo, and repair your relationship with women.
That sounds like the idea of it just makes me feel a little anxious. So
doesn't
it's
it make you scared? Of course. It'll send shivers right up your spine.
Yeah, it kind of gives me a
because you're going to sit in a room. You see, there's a part of you that feels wrong. There's a part of every woman who feels close to her father that feels a shame.
Yeah.
And this kind of basic shame that I'm going to be punished for something I did, which was got close to daddy. You're going to get punished for it. So the thought of you sitting in a room with a group of women, it would send shivers up your spine as if they're going to punish you.
It totally does. I feel like it's automatically going to be like kind of a room full of enemies.
Yeah. You know what the trouble when you're alienated from your own sex, men who are not close to men, and women who are not close to other women, the real problem becomes you lose track of your own maternal instinct. You don't have your own maternal self that you could turn towards yourself because you were never really that close to your mom.
So you mean you should be able to nurture yourself.
Yeah, it's great to be able to nurture yourself, but when you're alienated from all women... When you're alienated from your fellow women, you don't develop that nurturing self as much, you see. And you got to be nurtured by the same sex. Men need men friends. Women need women friends. When women only have men friends, it's saying we have an arrested development. When men only have women friends, we say it's an arrested development. It's essential, it's vital to have friends of the same sex. It helps you. And it makes even the love you have for your mate richer and fuller. A person who's married or in a relationship with someone else who has no friends outside of the marriage, you know, outside of the relationship, very, very difficult. The pressure that it puts on the relationship, you know?
Yep.
So it's kind of essential, and it's a great thing, and it's a great thing for you to open up and to challenge and to make a priority in your life. Now, if you don't do it through a group, there's another way of doing it as well, which is to do it through volunteer services. If you volunteer your time in a place where there are a number of other women giving with you...
I have avoided all those circumstances.
Sure, I understand, because of the competition, because you think... that there's going to be somebody who's going to dislike you and punish you.
I think that there's always going to be like this jockeying for power, and I don't want to be in it.
Yeah.
But I should go forth and give it a shot, right?
It would be great if you could.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll do more. When we come back, we'll play you some unusual music, and then we'll play, we'll do some more on sibling rivalry, and we'll take more of your calls.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Yes, you're listening to Squad Massey. SQUADMASSI.
Falim hayalini
which you share the love. It's Armenian. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're talking about sharing the love, and we're talking about sibling rivalry, you know, and competition. I've got much more about competition because, you know, I really think it's the basis of our world. The idea of what democracy is people competing against each other to get to the top of the heap. And the world runs that way. And the idea of nature is survival of the fittest, which is more competition. But when we look at it in our children, we don't want to see it. But there are so many things that affect this idea of trying to bring up your children in a way so that they are not hurting each other. Well, it's possible. It's possible as a parent to not foster the sibling rivalry if you understand, number one, that it is perfectly natural, and number two, it goes on behind your back. And there's nothing you could do to catch it. So you're not going to be a cop trying to find out what you could do to get your children to be kinder to each other. That's not going to happen that way. No, there are other things you need to do. As a child grows and develops, they develop ready-made skills and how to deal with competition that start in early childhood. And when they reach adult life, he or she will use destructive schemes with his or her social or business associates, with their subordinates, eventually with their own spouses, and with their own children. So the emotional environment existing within a family during the child's first few years of life have important delayed effects. Now, you know, it's kind of a funny thing, too, that happens with parents. If you're an older child whose younger sister or brother steals the parent's attention away from you and you never deal with it, you know, it often happens. When you become a parent, you resent your child. Your child becomes another sibling, especially as a male. As a male, you know, just think about the average guy. He's a guy, and he was, let's say, he was, this happens a lot to younger brothers, or middle brothers. You're born into a family, and you're a middle boy. And there's an older boy who's torturing you all the time because he hates you because you're getting attention. And you go by for a year or two, and then this other kid is born, and that kid gets the attention. So now you're the middle child, and it's hard for you to find a spot where you can get the love and attention that you need. So you leave the house. You develop a skill. You get married. But you're married, and you have this underlying thing inside you of jealousy, competition, and please don't take my mommy away, which is your wife. Then you say, let's have a family. And you think, this is a good idea. We'll have a family, and this way we will be more bonded. My wife and I will be closer to each other. Oh, no, my friend. You have a child. Give up your wife. Right? There goes sex out the window. There goes a lot of romance out the window. There goes a lot of attention out the window, and it recreates the scenario from early childhood. So many fathers hate their younger children. They hate their children because they're stealing the attention. Now, I know you're going to think this is crazy, but it's unconscious, and it comes out all the time. 212-209-2900. Many of you remember this. I'm sure I'm not going to be able to talk about all that I want to say about sibling rivalry today, but I am going to bring you some of the things that parents can do to help with the situation. And if you want, my friends, make sure you get a recording of today's program if you know of somebody who is a parent. Because when a person becomes a parent and they have a family, they're lost. They don't know about this stuff at all. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Armand?
Good.
All right, this is Matthew.
Hello, Matthew.
How you doing? Yeah, I can relate with that. My mother, she had 7 kids, and the younger boy, I remember always torturing him because he was getting a lot of attention to, you know, from my mother, and it was sort of hard. It's still sort of difficult today. I mean, we don't bicker as much, but my whole family's dynamics is like, the whole family's mindset is just all warped.
It's all warped. Did you say
warped?
Warped.
Warped, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of competition and not a lot of love, but I'm sure when there's a tragedy that you all gather together, you know?
Yeah, that seemed to be the only time.
And that's the only time. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that families create tragedy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they create tragedy so that they'll all get together. The rest of the time, they're at each other's throats.
Absolutely. To this day, me and my mother, we still don't have a relationship because when I was like 13, 14, Dices had took me out the home because I went in behind my mother's back and told my guidance counselor that because she was being, you know, very abusive to me. And, you know, that whole period for me was very difficult. And I see still today as an adult, I still try to get her attention in my own little feeble way, I have to say. And I don't know. I just still carry my mother's, I guess, her burden, though. I feel like I'm carrying something on because I can't get into a relationship still to this day with another female because I see parts of my mother still in her.
Yeah, I hear, Matthew.
Yeah.
I hear. You know, and I'll tell you something. I got two things going for you.
Mm.
Number one is you know yourself. And you know yourself somewhat because the things you're admitting to are not things that you frequently hear men admit to. They're usually blind to that, number one. Number two, understanding that part of you and saying, you know, there's part of this that just taps into my mother and it stops me from getting close. But being conscious of it stops you from being deliberately abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Because guys like you usually wind up being really mean to women, you know?
Right.
And instead you're just saying, no, I can't hack it. So it makes you kinder in that way. And number three, given time, the wound will heal.
Mm-hmm.
So my congratulations to you for your courage.
Thank you. You're
listening to this program, which means you're trying to learn about yourself.
Absolutely. It's truly refreshing, Omar.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
thanks for calling in, Matthew.
Okay, you take care.
Right. It touches me that we could in some way be there for a Matthew. Here are some of the principles that you need to know if you're trying to help with the sibling rivalry. First of all, you must understand that the most complex structure in the known universe is a human mind. It is very complicated. It is always evolving according to its environment and what it sees. So every child is ever-changing and ever-evolving. Now, here's the important one. The human mental structure is self-organizing. It's a biological, neurological, and psychological fact that it is self-organizing. It is, you make up things in your mind as a child, and you figure things out. Here's the next fact. Children are egocentric. That means that for each particular child, the center of the universe is yourself. And his or her most important goal in the world is your own satisfaction. In other words, during early development, all children are incapable of thinking unselfishly. And you shouldn't expect them to. Eric Fromm, the renowned psychologist, considered this initial egocentric state lasts at least through the age of 8. He said, before age 8, don't try to get a child to be considerate of anything else, because all they care about is themselves. They'll give you an illusion about caring, and then they'll pull the hair when you're not looking. This doesn't mean that children cannot pretend to imitate unselfish behavior. That's what they do in order to get their parents' approval. The next issue is that when a family is expecting a new baby, the parents could begin to talk and to convince the only child or the older children of how important their help is going to be with the caring of the new baby or brother or sister. You could talk to the child. Now, this is unfortunate. If you have a child, age 1, it's very hard to talk to them. It may be wise to have your second child at age 3. A lot of people say, no, I want them to be the same age. I want them to be close to each other. But they can't understand very much. It's a funny thing in Judaism, I believe. Abortions are allowed if a parent has a child under 2 years old. What is that? So it's like there's a wisdom in there about, you know, wait a while to have your next child. Because then you could engage the first person in the parenting of the next child, or at least welcoming that child. Another thing the parents could do is they could carefully observe their children, and they should never demonstrate a special preference for one of the children. This is so hard. You know, I mean, you know it. Gracie is your kid. You know, I mean, who's child? You know, it's hard not to feel that. But never demonstrate that preference. And this is very difficult. Giving preferential treatment to one of your children is one of the most toxic attitudes that a parent could have with respect to their families. And I tell you, you got to work it out somehow, because if you do it, right, the kids are going to be caught in that roller coaster of rivalry. You confirm their suspicions that one is preferred over the other. Another common mistake among parents is that they tend to over-identify themselves with one or more of their children and to satisfy that child's every wish. To give that child something, I want to give my kid what I never had. Well, that's a mistake. You know, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 200 years ago, the French philosopher, wrote, you know, a sure way to make an unhappy child? It's to accustom that child to getting everything he or she wants. Because as the child grows, so will its demands. Sooner or later, the child's wishes will become larger than our capacity to satisfy them, and this unexpected denial will cause the child more torment than the lack of things he demanded of us, and that torment will be great. So giving a child everything they want and satisfying every demand because you are living vicariously through them is a mistake. And from that comes a lot of hate and pain and loathing. So giving too much or giving too little, both extremes will do damage to the children. Now, this mistake is frequently done with children of parents of an only child. You know, an only child. When you have an only child, you tend to overload the kid with too much stuff. Another very toxic attitude that parents have towards their children is showing them approval for harmful or destructive behaviors, such as the lack of respect towards the other parent or towards any of the child's siblings or any other person. So, for example, I heard of a case recently where a son, a mother was screaming around the house over something, and the father, who didn't like dealing with his wife too much, he started mocking her, and he noticed, he said, and I noticed my young son was mocking my wife too. And he said, oh my God, what did I do? Watching one of your other children disrespect one of your mate is a sign that you've nurtured this kind of negativity and it's time to grab it. So, or if they show a lack of respect or a destructive behavior with anybody in the neighborhood, somehow that's got to be caught too. The fact that they beat somebody out of something, right, is not necessarily to be celebrated if it's at the cost of somebody else. And another one is that a parent should never leave a child alone at home with the older parents, with the older children, if they're less than 12 years old. Just never leave them alone. You can't do it. You need a parent around, or you need somebody around under 12 years old, and especially at 12, don't say, oh, the older ones could take care of the younger ones. They're not going to do it. A lot of stuff goes on there that it could be so destructive, especially with a pubescent boy. You know, you got a pubescent girl. You know, you have them breaking into their sexuality, and they have so much energy that could become channeled in such a destructive way. Another factor of what parents could do is family activities with all of the children, to get the parents together and go out and do things, but don't play games where one child wins and the other one loses. And don't celebrate the win of what child. Do something where everybody wins. You know? Don't make it a competition. If you go out and you're going to string popcorn or whatever you're going to do, if you're going to put things on lawns or whatever you do at Christmas time or Halloween, it shouldn't be a competition. It should be something that's cooperative. As much as you can, do something where the children cooperate with each other. Not forced, but somewhere where they get rewarded for the cooperation. Now, remember that each child's temperament is a matter of luck. Nature kind of selects it at random. It is not necessarily predictable. Some kids have abrasive temperaments, are strong-willed, and may be easily angered and irritated, and their twin could be completely opposite. So remember that there is something in nature that will leave you to either have a docile, obedient, sweet-tempered, mild-mannered, or an outrageous child, and leave room for the way that nature does it. Do not assume that one person is wrong and the other person is right for the way they are. And above all, spend time with each of the parents. Don't wait to ask for their consent. You bring them in the world, take charge of spending time with them too. Spend time with them individually, but try to do it equally. Go to a movie with your kid. So these are part of the things that can be done to help decrease the sibling rivalry and at least deal with it in some way. There are many more factors and many more considerations, but sibling rivalry, as I see it, is at the basis of many of the most destructive behaviors that people have towards each other. Poor sibling rivalry will affect your relationship with your mates, your relationship with your mates' friends, and your relationship with your children, you know? I wish we had many, much more. I wonder if we have time for one more call today. Hey, let's take one call. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. I love squeezing it in. I know, Michael, I'm popping it on you at the end. 212-209-2900. One more call. Just good for a minute, but I've had people hanging on. Let me take one of them now. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Ralph.
Hi, Ralph. Oh, hello, Ralph. I have just a minute.
Okay. I was thinking about what you were saying about sibling rivalry, and I noticed in my thoughts that most of the rivalry between me and my brothers and sisters was all physical. There was never seemed to be a competition for my parents' affection. It was always literally we were beating each other up, which seems to have ended, obviously. But now, at this point, I would say more than anything, I'm very proud of my brothers and sisters. One of my brothers is a professional. He's a nuclear pharmacist. And I'm very, very proud of that fact to say to other people, my brother is a nuclear pharmacist.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, my youngest sister, who you and I have spoken about, she never really was involved in any of the interaction with us when we were younger, and now she has become the biggest handful in the family. Very, very difficult person to deal with.
It does manifest because her position was very, very difficult, and nobody did anything wrong, you know? So now it becomes really difficult. I hear you. It's really nice when the rivalry could be there and then you grow out of it together. But I have to get going, Ralph, and thank you so much for calling in.
Have a good day.
Right. 212-20. No more calls. I'm sorry. If you want a copy of today's program, you could call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Look at the website, thepositivemind.com.
No me digas, no me digas tener razón.